3 o'clock hour, Burns and Gambo Show, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Monty Williams, after the four-point overtime win against the Utah Jazz, does it make you feel like you can beat anybody in the West?
We just don't focus on any of that stuff. You know, I hear it, and it's – I hope we do, you know, but our goal has always been to win every game, you know, improve every month. I've said that since I've been here. This team has to go through these types of experiences to win big. You know, being number one in the West would be a huge accomplishment for us, but it's just not our focus. We just want to win every game we can, and if that means we're number one in the West, then great.
Game and a half back of Utah for the number one spot in the West after the win last night. A game back in the loss column. What did last night mean, big picture, for the Suns?
Different things to different people.
Okay.
Like to Chris Paul, who's been in the playoffs for years and won so much, it's not a big deal. He even said after the game, look, it's not a series. It's one. Like he was happy, but it's one game. To players like Booker and Ayton and Mikal, I think it means more. Cam Johnson, I mean, these guys, that's a playoff atmosphere. They're playing a team that had a better record than them. That's and you beat them. To those guys, it's more of a, they don't have the confidence boosts over the years that Chris Paul has had. You know, this old Devin Booker is known as losing. You know, and this is the first year they're winning outside of the 8-0 in the bubble. So I think it means different things to different people. To Chris Paul and Jay Crowder, it's a good win. It's a good win. It's a tough team. It's a good win right there. I'm happy with that. To these other guys, it's a confidence boost. We could play with anybody. We could beat anybody. They played. Utah played as hard as they could, and the Suns beat them. So I think it means different things to different people.
Yeah, Chris Paul after the game said that was exactly the game we needed, the moment we needed
it. It's still just a game. You know what I mean? Like, it don't win a series or whatnot. I think it was good for us to get a game like that under our belt. I've been telling Coach, you know, we got to play some heavy minutes. You know, so we're used to it going into the playoffs. So it's good to get nice, intense games like this where you got to think.
Yeah, Chris Paul
not a big deal.
Doesn't need to know what that's like. Jay Crowder doesn't need to know what that's like. Devin Booker has never played in a playoff-type game in his entire NBA career. DeAndre Ayton has never played in a playoff, and even though they only had 5,000 fans there last night, they have never played in a playoff-atmosphere-type game in front of actual human beings ever in their NBA playoff career. In their NBA career, right? When would Devin Booker have played a game with that intensity, with that much on the line, in a playoff-type atmosphere in the NBA in his entire life?
August 13th, final game in the bubble.
But there was nobody there.
I get it. I get it. I don't know which game was bigger. I don't know that. I have to think, which game was a bigger game for Devin Booker? The final game in the bubble when they played the Mavericks and they had to win, or this game against the Jazz when you're battling to try to get the first...
I'm gonna go to my grave saying it was last night's game.
Okay.
Click on the box score to that game against Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah.
Nobody played.
Luka Doncic played 13 minutes.
Nobody played.
Yep.
Okay. And I don't try to diminish 8-0.
Mm-hmm.
It's apples and oranges, man. When you're playing a Dallas Mavericks team that played nobody in front of nobody, and now you're playing the number one team in the NBA in front of 5,000 fans, you've expanded fans. You know, you went from 3 to 5 on this night. National TV audience, all of that stuff. Man, I don't even think it comes close.
Yeah.
I don't even think it comes close.
I would agree with you. I would agree with you. But I was just saying, I'm trying to think, has Devin Booker played in a big game? Look, that Dallas game, even though Luka played 13 minutes and he said rested, like that was a big game for them. Because if they won, they had a chance to go to the playoffs and play in a play-in game. So that was a big game. But you're right, Dallas didn't play anybody. So you could probably make the argument. And that's a really good question. What was a bigger game, the final game in the bubble or this?
I think it's this every day that ends in Y.
Jordan, what do you think? Which game was bigger, the final game in the bubble to go 8-0 and have a chance to get in, depending on what Brooklyn and Portland did, or this game?
Absolutely last night.
Last night.
Yeah.
Okay. It's one game. It's not a series. It doesn't clinch anything. I mean, it could still end up first, second, third, fourth in the West.
But
the atmosphere with 5,000 fans there.
The atmosphere and the proof for some of those younger guys that when we get pushed against a playoff team in a playoff atmosphere,
we'll push back. Yeah.
We'll push back.
They proved something to themselves.
It's there. If we dig for it, it's there. We will respond. We can respond. We can get punched. Because, you know, that game, I mean, I think you put it in your notes. You used the boxing analogy. It was a fist fight at the end.
Oh,
I mean,
it was.
It was an ab for the last 5 minutes
of
the fourth quarter.
The game.
The entire overtime. That was a fist fight of a basketball game. And they never backed down. And they never walked away. And they never, you know, crawled inside their shell and hid from that game. They respond. They needed a game like that. Does that mean that they're going to finish with a number one seed? I don't know. Does that mean that they're going to go to the Western Conference?
It means that if they play Utah in the playoffs, they're going to feel like they could beat them.
It means that they're going to feel like in a best of seven, they're not going to back down in that moment. That doesn't mean they're going to win.
You need several,
but they're not going to back down.
Over the course of a season, a team like the Suns that hasn't been, that you need several reasons to believe in yourselves. And that was one last night. There's a reason to believe in yourself. They played well. It was a physical game. It was a hard-fought game. I mean, the Suns jumped out to a great lead early, and then the Jazz came back, and then the Jazz had a great third quarter, and then the Suns responded, and it was back and forth and back and forth, and then, you know, they won that game. It was a 15-round slugfest. That's the way it really was. It was a 15-round slugfest.
Yeah.
And the Suns responded.
I was watching SportsCenter after the game. I actually saw him say this live. This is Tim Legler on SportsCenter last night. Suns, Jazz, best of seven series, who wins? Here's what Legs said.
I think I would lean toward the Phoenix Suns. I think having two different guys that you just trust to run your offense through at the end of the game. And by the way, another thing in this game that people should have noticed, they can get gritty when they need to. They were unbelievable defensively in the first half, Linda, and their offensive rebounding, the nuts and bolts, hard hat type stuff in the second half, was a big factor in this game. So they're not just a finesse offensive team. They can roll their sleeves up when they need to. I saw that out of them tonight.
Far from it. They're far from a finesse offensive team. That's actually not what defines them. That's actually not, I don't think that's what defines, I think what travels well, what they start with is their defense and the way they defend. The way DeAndre Ayton anchors their defensive coverage, the way Chris Paul, Mikal Bridges, who had a tough night last night with the fouls. If you're asking me what defines the Phoenix Suns, I think their defense defines them more than their offense.
I think so, too. But there is, like, they have been as good. Like, they're a top six team offensively and defensively, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you had some notes about that I thought was very interesting. I think they were six defensively.
Here's the note from Kevin O'Connor over at The Ringer. We had him on the show about a month ago when he wrote that big glowing piece about the Suns for TheRinger.com. The Phoenix Suns have the NBA's best record over the last 2 months of the season, 25-5, the number one offensive rating, the number six defensive rating. And then I saw this one against top-notch competition. The Phoenix Suns are now 10-4. Against teams with a top 10 point differential, they're 8-1 against those teams since February 1st.
Wow.
I mean, so it's
yeah, it's just more proof, right? You just want to keep taking those steps. For a team that doesn't have the playoff experience with a lot of their key young players, these are games that matter then. That's why I said, you know, who does it matter to? It matters more to Booker, Ayton, and McHale and Cam than it does to Chris Paul. To Chris Paul, it doesn't win a series. It's just a game.
Yeah.
But to those other guys, it's, we just beat the Utah Jazz. We could beat these teams. They've been getting pummeled by these teams for years.
Yep.
And now they're capable of beating them.
Starting next Monday, we're giving you the chance every weekday to win $500. Text the word bonus to 620-620 to register. Listen for your name at 7:35 in the morning with Doug and Wolf, 1:35 in the afternoon with Bickley and Murata, and 3:35 right here on the Burns and Gambo Show for your chance at the Arizona Sports signing bonus. Text bonus to 620-620. Coming up on this Thursday edition of the Burns and Gambo Show, Gambo's been floating the idea for weeks.
I have.
And now we have a mock draft supporting the idea that the Arizona Cardinals could trade up to select perhaps the most dynamic player in this draft. Will he take the bet? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Well. Yep. Well, now, before you go taking any victory laps, it's just a mock draft.
Oh, yeah.
It proves nothing.
Yes. Oh, yes.
It proves nothing.
Somebody else is on to something that I'm on to. That's what it proves.
Somebody else is on to something that you're on.
I was the first to say this, and I am no longer on an island by myself.
So you have company.
I am no longer on an island by myself. And how long ago did I say this?
3 weeks ago, probably. If I were gonna ballpark it, I would say 3 weeks. Peter Schrager.
I'll give you the date exactly, but go ahead. You look it up.
No, I'm about to play some sound. You look it up.
Okay. Okay. I'm looking it up.
You look it up. Yeah. Peter Schrager from Good Morning Football put out a mock draft today, and in his mock draft, he had the Arizona Cardinals moving up to number 7.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
To take Florida tight end.
Woo!
Kyle Pitts.
The Cardinals, who've been the most aggressive team in the NFL this entire offseason, swing again, trade up with Detroit, and get Kyle Pitts as he slips.
Monday, March 22nd.
Okay, so about 3 weeks.
Monday, March 22nd, I said...
2.5 weeks ago.
Cardinals might consider trading up to go get the tight end out of Florida.
Yep, you did say that.
That was the date. Monday, March 22nd, I said that.
Yeah. Now, all proofs is that you are, as you say, not on an island. Somebody else has now mentioned this. Peter Schrager is kind of one of those guys who, throughout the years, we've sort of noticed his, for lack of a better word, alignment with the Arizona Cardinals, right? Pete Prisco is another one of those guys. Adam Schein is another one of those guys. I would say Peter Schrager is one of those guys who frequently speaks of the Cardinals and has news of the Cardinals and has thoughts, very detailed thoughts of the Cardinals. It's interesting. Here's his details on his mock in which he has the Cardinals moving up to number 7 to take Kyle Pitts.
I've got the Arizona Cardinals, another aggressive team, trading up to get Kyle Pitts at 7. Here's what it would be. The 16th overall pick, next year's first, and a 2022 third. But Kay, I ask you, do you think after all this buzz, if he can go second overall, he can go third, he can go fourth, do you think it's possible that this Kyle Pitts can slip to 7th? And do you like the fit in Arizona as opposed to maybe Cincinnati or Miami?
Of course, if I'm a Cardinals fan waking up and seeing this mock draft over at NFL.com/Schrager, and you should go there, and thank you for all the hard work on this, Peter. You're like, yeah, giddy up. You're throwing confetti. You're doing the Rod Tidwell Arizona Cardinals touchdown dance in your living room this morning. Because, of course, you want this game-changing talent, this 6'6 absolute stud.
I have two questions about this.
Okay, let's go.
And they're two legitimate questions, I
think.
Number one, is that truly what it would take, next year's first and next year's third, or is there more? Because remember, we talked about this late last week, and we were kind of comparing the price that San Francisco paid to move up, to get to number 3 in the draft, right? And it was this year's first, next year's first, the year after that first, and a third.
Ooh, okay.
Okay? I mean, and that was to move up a similar number of spots in the draft that the Cardinals would have to move up to execute this. Okay? So basically, what Schrager is saying it would take, and yet you have to add another first-round pick in 2023. That's what San Francisco paid to move up. That's question number one. Question number two, do you have to go higher than 7 to make sure you get them? Because I saw this mock, and one of the things I kind of thought of was, well, okay, that's great, but you can't execute that trade until draft night because you need to be sure Kyle Pitts is there at number 7 before you
He might not be there.
You can't do it now. I mean, because if you do it now and he's not there at number 7, you're hosed, right? So you have to wait until draft night if you're going to do something that bold. But I do think it's interesting that you are now not alone in this suggestion.
Yeah. So I'm happy to have somebody come join me on the island. Peter Schrager will be like my Wilson. Right? I was there first, and then the package came later. Wilson came later, a few days later. Wilson washed up on the shore.
So I'm
Tom Hanks.
You're Tom Hanks.
And he's Wilson.
And he's a volleyball, a bloodied volleyball with a hand that looks like a face.
That's right. And we became best friends. We wanted the same thing. You know?
And yet, to get off the island, you're going to let Peter Schrager float away in the ocean? I mean, while you're screaming his name the whole time?
Yeah, because at that point, Schrager! I'm just worried about myself. Yeah.
Schrager!
It is nice to have company.
Schrager!
Listen, you've even been trying to get me into a bet
this. You want to? It's still there. It was going to expire on Friday. It did actually expire on Friday, but this just...
You've extended it?
Oh, I've extended it. If you're unfamiliar, the bet is a 5-for-1. I will buy Gambo lunch for a week, one solid straight week, if the Cardinals trade up and draft Kyle Pitts. He only owes me one lunch if they don't. I'm offering you 5-to-1 odds.
I'll take the bet.
Babalugas, we got a bet here.
I'll take the bet.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Because I think that there's a chance. I've always thought, I wouldn't have brought it up on March, what did I say the date was?
March 22nd.
Monday, March 22nd on our show. Julian, you might be able to find it now. It was Monday, March 22nd. I said that, like, you know, that Pitts could be a guy they trade up for. And ever since then, you've been trying to make me to get this bet, 5-for-1 bet. And I've kind of been like, it's hard. Like, I know it's going to be hard to get him. Like, I know it's going to be really, really hard to get him. But it's not impossible.
Well, no, it's not
impossible.
And I've never, look, I've never, ever said that I don't like Kyle Pitts. And I've never, ever said that it's impossible. I just know it's very expensive. And it's the kind of move that usually you execute when you're trying to go get a quarterback, a tight end, you know. Now, a listener pointed out the last time we talked about this, late last week, I believe, that it's not just quarterbacks that teams can do this for. The Atlanta Falcons, once upon a time, made a very similar move for Julio Jones. And you can debate whether that worked out for them or not. I mean, they got a generational player, and they had a lot of success. But it's a very risky move, and you could argue for a general manager, it's a I'm betting my job kind of move. You know, when you're giving up future picks like that to move up to take a tight end, that had better work, because if that doesn't work, that's one of those I'm betting my career type moves on that spot. And so it's risky. It's expensive.
Okay, if they moved up and they could have one of the top corners, and they passed on one of the top corners. If Patrick Surtain is on the board, and they moved up and they took Pitts, would people have an issue with that? It's a fair question.
So if Patrick Surtain...
Right, Patrick Surtain's on the board.
On the board at 16?
No, if they trade up. If the Cardinals trade up...
if they trade up, I see what you're saying.
Because people are going to say, why don't you just draft the cornerback then if you're moving up? Go get the corner. You need a corner.
Because you're thinking that one of your top three cornerbacks are going to be there at 16 and you wouldn't have to give up future inventory to do it, right? If you've got...
I don't think you're following me.
No, I am following you. I'm just saying, why move up to get a cornerback when one of those three cornerbacks are going to be there at 16?
Because you only like two cornerbacks.
Well, then you'd have to only like two.
Yeah. You only like two because one guy's got a back injury and you're really leery on that guy.
You do it because you think you're going to get the next Tony Gonzalez.
Right.
You do it because you think you're getting George Kittle times 10, Travis Kelce times 20. You know, you do it because he is considered to be a complete game changing type player. Now, Kay Adams, also on Good Morning Football, she doesn't see Kyle Pitts getting past Cincinnati at 5, and I actually tend to agree with her.
I'm the Bengals. I'm not taking a tackle at 5. I'm taking Pitts. I know and I get what you're saying. Burrow and Chase, they got history. We get it. This draft, though, is so deep with receiver talent. It simply comes to supply and demand for me. I'll say it again. There's about 5 or 6 really good wide receivers, and then there's this guy that we're watching. Just keep going with the highlights. Yes, the touchdown dances, all of that. I don't think you can make the case, Shriggs, that you can I don't think any of these pass catchers should go ahead of Kyle Pitts, and I think that it would be a crime to do so.
And I think she might be right.
I think she might be right, too.
I think she might be right.
Because I've said that. Who goes first? Chase will be, I think, the first wide receiver taken. I think he'll go ahead of Waddle and ahead of Devontae Smith. But who should go first, Pitts or Chase? Which guy?
And if you think it's Pitts, then 7's not going to cut it. You got to go higher.
Man, that would be such a bold move to move up to get him.
It would be a bold move.
God, it would be such a
bold
move.
It would be a bold, risky, expensive, debated,
exciting,
much talked about move if they were going to swing big like that. All right, you took the bet. You took the bet.
If he hasn't been taken and we hear that the Cardinals have made a trade, I'm probably going to lose my mind.
I imagine you probably will. Phoenix Suns handled their business last night against the best team in the West after such an emotional win. What's left in the tank for another big game tonight against the LA Clippers? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Great. Now go do it again.
I keep thinking of Rocky. You ain't so bad. You ain't so bad.
Awesome. You beat the Utah Jazz last night on national TV. Now go do it again.
Yeah.
Tonight against the Clippers.
You know,
in LA on national TV. The team that's right behind you in the Western Conference. So you beat the team that's ahead of you. Go beat the team that's behind you now in the Western Conference.
So 24 hours ago, I say to Dave Burns, Suns have the Jazz and the Clippers back-to-back. They're going to split. You okay with that? You know you are.
Yeah, I mostly would have been okay
with that. Should we be okay with that?
Oh, no. God, no. Not now.
Is that us? Is that on? Fans, ask yourself this. If I would have told you yesterday they're going to play the Jazz and the Clippers back-to-back and they're going to split, how many of you would have said, okay, so I'll sign me up for that. I don't want to go 0-2.
I think most fans would.
But are we discrediting how good the Suns are by asking for a split? Should we be like, hell no, win both? I mean, it's a serious question. I don't know.
Well, okay. Are you asking me what I think is going to happen or what I want to happen? What I've been happy with?
Yes.
Are you asking me what would I have been happy with?
Yes.
I would have been happy with a split.
Right.
But now I'm
asking you, should you? Like, should we?
No, I probably should have set the bar a little higher.
And that's the question I'm asking.
Yeah, I probably should have set the bar a little higher.
Should we be setting the bar higher for the Phoenix Suns?
Sure.
Or are we just so used to losing that when we see they're playing two good teams in a row, we're like, oh, I hope they split.
Now, that being said, I think tonight is going to be a challenge. And I'm being very, you know, careful when I choose my words. I don't want to sit here and say that they can't win tonight. They're a very good basketball team, the Suns, obviously. Devin Booker played 44 minutes last night. Chris Paul played 43 minutes last night.
Yeah, they're tired.
DeAndre Ayton played 40-something minutes last night. Mikal Bridges should be nice and rested after sitting on the bench with all those fouls that he had in last night's game. The Clippers did not play last night, so they're going to come in and they're going to have a little more juice in the tank. And the Clippers, you know, with once having thoughts of me. First of all, before I looked at the standings, let's just talk about the Clippers for a second. They've been a little hit and miss lately, right? But they've made some changes to their roster. And if you look at some of the deeper stats, they're still one of the best teams in the NBA, man. Offensive rating, second in the league. Defensive rating, 10th in the league. Net rating, third best team in the NBA.
Yeah,
it's a very good basketball team they're playing tonight.
Yeah, and listen, they added DeMarcus Cousins, who's not anywhere near the player he used to be. He's had a torn Achilles, he's had a quadricep injury, an ACL injury. I mean, he's 30 years old. He's not a guy that I think can help him very much, but, you know, he's on that 10-day contract, and, you know, he's going to come in there and try to play hard and be that big body that they need, toughness, rebounding, be a big body for them. That's what they want. They got Rajon Rondo. You know, and I think they really like Rondo for the playoffs where his experience can come in and help them. But remember, they're all in because of the trade for Paul George. They traded every draft pick they have for the next 75 years to go get Paul George. Now, Ty Lue's just trying to figure out the bench. You know, Terrence Mann, Luke Kennard, you know, these guys are having their minutes cut, and they're going to rely more heavily on Rondo and Beverly when these guys are all healthy and things like that, the veteran guys. So they're all in to try to win right now. That's why they made the Rondo trade. That's why they added Cousins. They're just trying to do whatever they can to win. They've won 10 out of 14. But it's like, you know, on an even, you know, if both teams are well-rested and it's even, I mean, it could be a hell of a game. Sure, the Suns are at a disadvantage having played all those minutes last night and now having to play a team that's well-rested. But listen, this is the challenge. This is what you got to get up for. You got to get up for this game.
Sure.
Monty's not going to sit guys in this game tonight against the Clippers. They're not going to do that.
Oh, no.
If they get down big.
And you know what? I'd be kind of – and what's weird about this matchup, too, is like the Jazz the night before, the Suns haven't seen the Clippers in a long time.
No, because the last time they played the Clippers and the Jazz were about the –
it was about the same time.
Back-to-back?
It was like the first couple weeks of the season. And
like
remember,
right
the one time they did play the Clippers, they were down by like 33
and they came all the
points,
way back.
And they came all the way back within one possession of that game and then lost. It was about as encouraging of a loss as you can possibly find. I'd be very surprised if the Suns, if this is not a one or two possession game with a minute to go in the fourth quarter. I just think the Suns are too good and too focused and too driven right now to allow anything else to happen. And that if they come through this with back-to-back wins, given the situation, then I don't think we locally reassess the Suns because I think we've already got a very high opinion of them. I do wonder if nationally people just start to say, because you sent me something today, and I saw the same story. I didn't include it in my email. It was from a gambling perspective, but they didn't list the Suns as one of the chief contenders against the Lakers, right? They gave it to the Nuggets and the Jazz.
And the Clippers were all rated ahead of them. It was a story on ESPN, biggest threats to the Lakers. The Suns were a plus 900, but the Nuggets, Jazz, and Clippers had better odds. And they even asked, why are the Suns, not getting, the same credit? And part of it, you know, they think was just because the Suns just haven't been a good team for so long.
That's the only reason.
Yeah.
That's the only reason. If the Suns were a playoff team a year ago, all right, if the Suns had made it to the postseason and had won a series last year, they're getting all the credit in the world. And everyone's jumping on board and everyone's buying it. It's just they're the Suns. They spent 10 years wandering in the desert looking for wins, not finding any. No one's buying it because it just came out of the clear blue sky. If there was some history of success, recent history of success, to prepare us for this, I guarantee you people would be taking them more seriously. But if they win tonight and they get victories in these back-to-back games, you watch, the national types will all start to go, okay, wait, hold on a sec now. Maybe we really need to think about this team a little bit more seriously as a title contender than what we've done. Because look at what they just did if they win tonight.
I think that they are being looked at seriously as a title contender. I think they are. I think it's reasonable to look at these other the Nuggets. Man, they won seven straight, the Nuggets.
They're only a half game behind the Clippers for number three in the West.
You know,
they're coming.
I think it's fair to look at the Clippers as a better alternative than the Suns to beat the Lakers. I think that's fair. I think it's fair to look at the Nuggets as a better alternative. And the Jazz, I mean, I think it's just really close. I mean, look, the Jazz missed all their three-point shots last night, and the game still went to overtime. They couldn't make a three-point shot to save their lives. I don't think it's crazy to look at those teams and say they should have better odds than the Suns. Like, I'm not upset about that. Oh, why do the Suns not have better odds than these teams? Those teams, like, you know, Kawhi Leonard's won a championship, man. You know, he's a great player. I could see those teams having better odds.
Okay, fair. I just think take a national NBA analyst and you say, okay, quick, off the top of your head, who can challenge the Lakers in the West? I bet the Suns probably are not top of mind.
Right.
Go back-to-back against the Jazz and the Clips with wins.
You think it could change the perception?
I think it could change the perception. I think maybe the Suns become a little bit more of a top-of-mind team for national pundits when talking about it. Like Stephen A. Smith, we played his rant from last week in which, you know, y'all better take them serious. Now, yeah, we played that. We had a good laugh about that. But I do think if they win tonight, depending on how they win tonight, I do think there's a chance they become a little more top of mind in that conversation. I just know tonight's going to be tough. That's a tough back to back. That's a really hard back to back.
With the play in overtime and the extended minutes, look, you may have to rely more on the bench tonight. You know, you might have to give your starters a little bit more of a rest in this game and rely on your bench to kind of keep you in the game. Because they didn't, you know, they had 29 bench points last night, but they may need to rely more on their bench if they're going to stay in this game against the Clippers.
Yeah,
that's my thought.
Yeah. Kendrick Perkins, who was on Bickley and Murata.
He loves the Suns.
Oh, he
loves them.
Oh, my gosh.
I think they're built similar to the Oklahoma City team that we didn't win a championship, but we went to the Western Conference Finals my first year there. And why I say that, because you look at the youth. But when you look at these guys, they're playing – they're not your typical 24, 23, 22-year-old. These guys are mature. These guys play the game at a mature level. So, to me, age don't mean anything. And I'm looking at this team, and I'm saying, you know what? It wouldn't surprise me, and it shouldn't surprise the world if we looking at the Phoenix Suns and they're coming out of the Western Conference this year. I had them pick as a top-five team in the West. But I didn't know they were going to be this good as fighting for the number one seed, and they really are good.
Since we're talking about back-to-backs, I will point this out too. The Jazz are also playing tonight. They're at home against the Portland Trail Blazers. Now, the Jazz at home are probably good enough to beat the Portland Trail Blazers on the second night of a back-to-back, but in case they're a little gassed too, and the Suns can pull one out tonight, they could pull to within a half game of the Utah Jazz for the number one seed in the Western Conference. They'd be tied in the loss column.
What are we down to? 20 games left?
22, I believe.
22 games left,
in the season. Yeah.
Look at you knowing that.
I believe that is where we're at. The Arizona Diamondbacks already having issues scoring runs. If Ketel Marte's trip to the injured list is a long one, how are they going to survive that? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Swung on a ground ball down to third. And the throw to first in time. Rockies won it. Rockies hang on, beat the Diamondbacks 7-3. They take 2 out of 3 from the series. Diamondbacks at home with a 2-5 road record to start the year.
That was the final from earlier today, 7-3, the Diamondbacks lose to the Rockies. They were actually being no hits. David Peralta broke it up, what was it, the seventh inning? He broke it up with the triple. And then they
got a base hit by, was it Pavin Smith?
It was Pavin Smith.
And they broke up the shutout.
They broke up the shutout.
Yes.
John Gray took a no-hitter into the seventh, but not on our watch, baby.
Yeah.
The Arizona Diamondbacks, who just for the last night, just for the second time in the 200-plus games as an organization that they've played at Coors Field, they were shut out last night for just the second time in 200 games.
That doesn't happen.
That it almost never happens at Coors Field, right? I mean, there were a whole bunch of things that happened last night to the Diamondbacks, and then obviously today losing 7-3, and then tomorrow it's opening day against the Reds down at Chase Field. There were a whole bunch of things that happened last night. Number one, Mad Bum didn't pitch well. Again, concern level is very, very high, rightfully so, because he has just been very poor to start the year. That's number one. Number two, the offense shut out at Coors Field. That's almost impossible to do, considering that it's happened twice in 200-plus games they've played up there. Number three was the Ketel Marte play that it looked awful when it happened. You saw it.
Grabbed it.
And it was just like a lump in your throat the minute it happened because you thought, oh, God, there it goes. Right?
Well, when he did it, I was watching the game. And in that inning, he's running to first base. He's trying to beat out the ground ball. And he pulls up. And you're like, okay, this is it. Like, there's like, you know, not that there was a lot of hope for the season. But, man, he was off to such a great start in this season. Even though he was 0-for-3 yesterday, he was off to such a great start. So he was the guy that gave you the hope that, you know, that he could, you know, maybe carry this team a little bit and they could win some games and hang around. And even going into this Colorado series, okay, you lost 3 out of 4 to the Padres. They're a great team. But now just win the series against Colorado and try to hang around 500 for as long as you can, and that'll keep you in it. And then, you know, obviously, they lose the series to Colorado and with the other injuries they have too, right? I mean, Tyler Clippard's out, Nick Ahmed's out, Cole Calhoun's out.
Zach Gallen, Joaquin Soria, right, Nick Ahmed, Chris Davinsky left the team for personal reasons.
Yep.
He was put on the restricted list. They say it doesn't have anything to do with COVID, but they're not saying what exactly it is. They have no depth at all in their bullpen right now. They are just absolutely strapped. They did, now initially today before the game, before the 7-3 loss to the Rockies, they said they were going to send Ketel Marte home for an MRI and they wouldn't have much more to say about him until they got the results of those. Something changed because they put him on the IL about 5 minutes before the game started. Here's Torrey Lovello on that decision.
The discomfort continued to be there. And, you know, we ask our athletes to share the most information and all the feelings that they're having. And he clearly did that. It was evaluated by the Rockies team doctor at that point. It was recommended that we put him on the IL. So it wasn't progressing the way we wanted to. I felt like, you know, we could get him back home originally to get our doctors, get in front of our doctors. But we felt like it was important for him to be seen as soon as possible. So at that point, we pivoted and put him on the DL and activated AY.
So at the recommendation of the Rockies doctor,
right,
they put him on the IL.
Now, he was always going. I mean, they had a discussion today, and they hadn't made up their mind yet, but after watching him leave the game and had to help him off the field, like, he was always going to go on the IL.
Well,
come on, wasn't he?
I mean, Torrey was suggesting after last night's game that maybe it was a cramp. It was a cramp that he had in his right leg, and they were, I think they were kind of hoping. You don't put a guy on the IL for a cramp in his hamstring.
Hurt his hamstring. It's not a terrible injury. In 10 days, he might be back. But with this hamstring injury, the key is you got to do nothing.
Yeah.
You got to do nothing.
Yeah.
10 days to 2 weeks, I don't think that he'll be out for like a month with a hamstring injury. But listen, we know those things. It's tough. Like, football players, right? You get a hamstring injury.
Depends on the severity of it. I mean, is it a little pull or is it a tear? If it's a little pull, then yeah, you're probably talking about a couple of weeks.
You ever have one?
If it's it's hard to know when you can come back because it's
you think you're fine,
then you run on full speed and you're not.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. You think you're okay. I'm good. And you're running. You're not.
But if it's a tear, there's a whole variety of hamstring kind of things that it could be. Either way, it's for a team right now that just offensively.
I know. What's worse, the starting pitching or the offense? I mean, my God, it's like, you know, pick your poison, because they're both poison. I mean, is it the offense or is it the starting pitching?
Is it Christian Walker's 160 batting average? Is it Eduardo Escobar's 048 batting average? How about Josh Rojas's 095 batting average? What about David Peralta's 167 or Tim LeCastro's 143?
I'm not going to trade anybody if these guys don't hit a little bit.
Pavin Smith's 154. Geraldo Perdomo's 111. I mean, Carson Kelly.
It's bad.
It's bad.
Carson Kelly's having a good year.
I was just going to say, Kelly's been fine. Asdrubal Cabrera's been fine.
I think he was my guy, too, Carson Kelly, for the bounce back.
And Ketel Marte obviously has been great, but now you've got this injury. As far as what happened today...
Jumped on us and scored those early runs. And, you know, we didn't play the type of game from that point forward that I expected us to. I thought we had some situations where we were getting pitched to, and... their pitcher did a good job, but I feel like our guys are better and they can get the job done. It was nice to see us get some momentum and a good bump start in the ninth inning. We had some quality at bats, and those are the things that I've come to expect from this group. Just got to get it done offensively. It's the bottom line.
I want to play this one for you. Okay. Torrey was asked if the struggles so far this year feel like last year's struggles.
Torrey, I know you guys had hoped to kind of just have a fresh start this year after last year. Does it kind of feel to you, though, like some things are just kind of rolling over from last year's struggles into this year?
No, it doesn't feel that way at all.
It doesn't?
That's what he said. No, it doesn't now.
Peralta, Escobar? I know Escobar finally got a home run, but he was batting 0-48 coming into the game. It was 1-for-21.
Yeah,
that's a lot of strikeouts.
That's one of those questions where it's probably not in Torrey's best interest to answer that question honestly. And that's not my underhanded way of accusing him of lying. I'm just saying that's one of those ones where you have to be very diplomatic about how you answer that question if you're Torrey Lovello.
Look, what's the saying? You can't make chicken scratch out of chicken.
Yes.
Right? I mean, it's a bad team. Now, listen, eventually people will blame Lovello, and that's why Ken Kendrick was on the air with us the other day, and he said he thinks Lovello's going to come back next year. No guarantees or anything. You could change your mind. But, like, this team's not good. Like, it's not a good baseball team. And they're going to – look, I mean, there's a chance they're one of the three or four worst teams in baseball this year. Like, there is. There's a chance that they could be in line to have one of the top draft picks next year. I believe that.
Mm-hmm. I do, too.
Like, there's a chance. I mean, they just lost two out of three of the Rockies. The Rockies are terrible. They traded Nolan Arenado. Like, they're not good. And they just lost two out of three to them. And the games they lost, they aren't even good games.
Nope.
So, I mean, I think there's a lot of really feeling to be worried. But, like, we'll have this conversation many times. People are going to blame Lovello. There's nothing here to work with.
I'm not sure
there's
what
not
Torrey
a lot
Lovello
to work
could
with.
Do to avoid this right now. I really. But then I'm biased. I'm a Torrey Lovello fan. I think he's a very good manager. So I might not be able to give you a completely unbiased answer when it comes to Torrey Lovello. I think he's a very good manager who right now doesn't have a very good team to manage. And I don't know how much of that is a him problem. Everyone knew that he was going to make a significant impact on the Suns organization, and boy has he. But after last night's performance, Chris Paul's work in Phoenix is once again starting to get some MVP-type notice. We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.